You are listening to Mahogany Says Radio Show with Mahogany Silvering, mahoganysilvering.net.
Passion Pride, Alejandra, an interracial romance author, Mahogany Silvering. Alejandro, the son of a jaguar king, who doesn't want to be king. When he has a premonition of a human woman's fight with drug coyotes, he rushes to save her. He takes her on the run to keep her safe from the cartel, who mistakenly believes that she has stolen from him. Alejandro and Regina fall in love. However, when his father is killed by cartel enforcers, Alejandro is forced to become king. But Regina feels unworthy to be his queen. Can this reluctant jaguar king lead his people, protect his homeland, and make Regina, a human, his queen? Passion's Pride, Alejandro, by romance author Mahogany Silvering. Available on Amazon. Get your copy today.
Fresh Meat, an interracial erotic romance by bestselling author L. Lorenz. Spending bike week in Daytona Beach was supposed to be research for an upcoming movie role. Smoke had no idea all the perks of being an undercover biker would offer. He couldn't afford any mistakes, so he took a vow of celibacy. However, fate had other plans. As soon as he arrived, a beautiful little Spitfire sparked his engine, and he threw those vows right out the window. Baby Bird captured his heart in one day. Now his mission is to make her his and claim his own happy ending. Fresh Meat, part of the Lunchtime Chronicles by best-selling author L. Lorenz. Available on Amazon. Get your copy today. Mahogany Says Radio Show with Mahogany Silvering. MahoganySilvering.net. Hello and good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining me on the Mahogany Says Show. I'm your host, Mahogany Silvering, and we've got a great show tonight. We have a brand new author who is, this is his very first book, and he's been anxiously awaiting its publication. Please, everyone, help me to welcome Mr. B.D. Vannoy. Now, do you prefer to be called Brian, or do you?
That's fine. Yeah.
Okay.
Fine.
Well, welcome, Brian. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, Mahogany, for this opportunity. Bear with me. This is literally the only the third time I've ever done anything like this. So it's like I'm really out of my comfort zone right now. So I'm a little nervous.
Well, that's all right. We're going to have a little fun and just relax and get into it. No one's going to bite. And if anyone's interested in asking questions, remember you can call the studio at 914-205-5632 and press 1 and I'll let you answer or ask your question on the air. Okay, so Brian, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, boy. I'll be turning 61 on Thanksgiving. And
Happy birthday early.
Thanks. Yeah, my family always teased me. They said I interrupted Thanksgiving supper. So, I've been a blue collar guy all my life. Worn a lot of different career hats. Designed draftsman, was a classically trained professional chef for 14 years. Worked at a worked at a Ford auto assembly plant in Norfolk, Virginia for 11 years. We made the F-150 truck, and then until they closed the plant in 2007. And I was at the time I was raising a single daughter, or as a single father. I was raising a daughter as a single father, and so that was a struggle. And eventually moved back up to Philadelphia, and where I'm originally from. I was actually raised in a loving, devout Mennonite family outside of Philly. My mom and dad were World War II generation and farmers for 25 years before I came along. So I was very blessed, had a very blessed childhood, and they laid the foundation for me that basically saved my, you know what, several times over my life when I was raising Hades and doing things I shouldn't have been doing. And somehow, some way, God allowed me to survive, and I somehow ended up in Georgia. And at that time, and this was about 12 years ago.
Okay, so that's how you started. Are you saying that when you got to Georgia, that's when you were inspired to start writing?
Yeah, I had just turned 50 years old, and a friend of mine had given me a book on Solomaic-based spiritual discipline, and it was kind of an epiphany for me. It was an awakening, and I had a pretty straight-laced. We were about as close to being Amish as you could get without being Amish. We were old order Mennonite. And so I was saturated and immersed with solid biblical foundational scripture and all that good stuff. And I ran away screaming from it when I was 16 years old and never returned until I was like 36. I mean, ended up getting baptized myself until I was like 36. And so It's just looking back on it now in retrospect, it's just I can look at pivot points or forks in the road. You know, you can look back on your life and say, wow, what would have happened if I would have went that way instead of this way, you know? And I can look back on it now and saying, thank God that I didn't go that way, because I don't know where I'd be. I feel that he's just been leading me up to this point. 12 years ago, when I started going through that Solomon-based discipline, heavy fasting and meditation and prayer, and it was – I think the foundation was always there. It was already planted in the ground, to use a farming analogy. But it had never sprouted yet, and I think that was when it came up through the top of the soil, and the growth, the real growth in my walk began 12 years ago, and just out of the, I mean,
When exactly did you begin writing? After your epiphany.
Yeah, it was, let's see now. I think it was about 10 to 12 years ago. I got hit over the head with it, because it was pretty much like God came to me and said, here's my message, and the core message that I want you to write about. And I'm like, wait a minute. you got the wrong guy here, because I never wrote anything in my life before. I mean, nothing. And like, English was my worst subject. I couldn't stand it at school. I absolutely hated it. And I ran kicking and screaming, and I fought, and my heart wasn't in it. And I just begrudgingly wrote just a really half-hearted attempt at this book. And it showed. It wasn't, you know, and I thought I was done. I thought I was like, okay, here you go, God. Here it is. This is this. You told me to write, and here's something, and I wrote it, and now leave me alone. Well, he kind of did. He kind of did for the next 10 years. And then 2019, in January, God comes back to me and slaps me upside the head. And he said, guess what, son? You're not done. I want you to go back and you're going to add to it. And you're going to do it. What I want you to do. And I just like, okay, I give up. And I did it. I did it. And it, but he turned the tap on too. And it was like, it was like I was 10 years older and I was in a different place. And I'm like, okay, let me give this a shot. I can do this. So I did it. And then I just kept going. And I from start I started and finished book two in 2019. And I now fully conceptualized what could be a potential 10-book series.
Wow.
And, and so January of this year, January of 2020, it was done, and I had come across a gentleman out in L.A. and New York. He's in L.A., Beverly Hills, and he's a former literary agent. I mean, the real deal, like big time literary agent. And he kind of led me in the right direction and gave me a lot of really good information. He actually wanted to bring me on as a client, but I couldn't he's real deals, which means he's really expensive. So, but he's, you know, he's got the chops. So
most agents don't really charge though.
No, but I mean, what he did was he's not a literary agent anymore. He's what he calls himself is an author's coach. So put it this way, one of his clients is Dan Brown from 48 Hours. So I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Okay, this guy's got to be for real if one of his clients is Dan Brown. I mean, you know, so I'm like, wow. And he's like, I don't take everybody. And he said, what you've got is a tremendous amount of potential, and you've got like a diamond in the rough here, but you need some serious work. And I'm like, okay. And we were talking like a whole year contract, and he has everything. I mean, make a long story short, what I ended up doing was I ended up using his query letter format, which is like four paragraphs. He has very specific query letter. In case your audience doesn't know, a query letter is when you write a proposal of the book, and you're going to be submitted out to literary agents and publishing houses of all various sizes and everything, basically to accept you as a client and bring you on into their publishing house. And that's what a query letter is designed to do. But it's really kind of designed to go after literary agents, because like the big five, you know, Penguin and Random House and so on and so on, they're not even going to look at you without a literary agent. I mean, really, they're not. So, but I guess I'm just too dumb to be knowledgeable, or I'm just too stubborn. I just went ahead and I started querying, because, and it was off the list of him, this gentleman out in Beverly Hills. I actually have him as an acknowledgement in the front of the book, because he really kind of just, it was his query letter that kind of turned
turned things for you.
For me. Yeah, so I ended up, over the course of several months, I ended up querying over 300 literary agents of all sizes, literary firms, and publishing houses, both here in the U.S. and the U.K., and I got all rejections except one, Morgan James.
And
what's really
Morgan
funny,
James is a hybrid publisher, are they not?
Right. The New York, they're hybrid traditional. And when I say hybrid is, in November, the middle of November, we had a huge, it was almost 2 hours long staff meeting, which included the president. David Hancock, and we went over every element of the book, laid it out in detail, the nuts and bolts about how this thing, we developed the schedule from here on out. That's we established a deadline. That's coming up like really, really quick. December 18th is the deadline to have the manuscript in their hands, finished manuscript.
That's great.
Yeah, and they were totally upfront, and they're international. They have full mark. I mean, they ended up doing the cover for me, because the cover I really – my dream cover was a Polish photographer in the U.K. That had actually done – a calendar series called Fallen Angels, and believe it or not, his mediums, he works in dairy products or paint, and he captures the splash, and he had the series called Fallen Angels, and the one was just, and God led me to this, but I ended up not being able to use it because his licensing fee was five figures. Because Morgan James was talking, Morgan James was talking about a half a million imprints that they wanted to use his image on. That's, they actually developed a contract, and I gave it to him.
Okay.
And he's like, wow, you know, it's like, oh, okay, well, we're talking about like 10 grand now, and I'm like, okay, well, maybe next time, you know. And so,
well, yes, and
Morgan
part
James,
of hybrid publishing, is that they also charge for some of their services, and they charge the authors sometimes. So it's not,
but they didn't, you know,
so your contract is not a full, it's not a full contract. It's where you're actually paying for publishing of your book, or are you participating in part of that?
No, the only thing I committed to, and this was stipulated to specifically by Mr. Hancock, the president, because there was some question. My question, I was concerned about it, was I had stipulated to, over the course of the contract, and this could be like several years. In other words, you know, the entire run of the entire first run of the book, you know, could be several years long, right? So he said no. He said no. He said this is over the course of the entire contract. He said, stipulated to buy 1,000 books at cost, which is $5. So $5,000, and I was like, $5,000. He's like, oh, he's like, no, take a breath. You know, he's like, I want to make this very clear. Don't worry about that. It's over the course of the entire contract. You know, and he's like, once they get the schedule is right now. Ebooks are going to be launched on 1,800 global platforms.
Wow!
Or on Easter, and then they have audiobooks, and then the physical books are scheduled to be on the shelves. And I'm talking about Barnes and Noble and Books a Million. You know,
right.
It's everywhere.
So
by June and July. Yeah. Oh well. That's actually a good question. I think right now, I think we're just looking at
paperback
for the initial. Yeah, and it's going to be a 6x9 format as we decided on, because and it was a good point. They said, it's easier to carry than most people. It's 6x9.
Yeah.
So right now, we're flirting with about 300 pages and about 90,000 words.
Wow.
Yeah, which is kind of pushing the limit because.
Right. So tell us a little bit about the characters in the book, because it's called Falling Toward Redemption, and it's about a fallen angel.
Yeah, and actually I want to apologize here because I think I actually sent you the wrong link. It was a very subtle change. I mean, most people wouldn't even notice the difference. And it was funny. This was one funny thing out of the meeting, because Mr. Hancock said that, and it was I'm trying to remember the other gentleman's name that was the head of publishing for Morgan James. And the two of them went back and forth, and he's like, I forget the other gentleman's name. I think his name was Jim. And they said, Jim, do you have a problem? The first thing he talked about was the title of the book, because it's really, really important, right? Jim said, I think it was Jim that said, he said, I want to say something up front. He's like, I have very, very rarely ever said that I don't have that I have an issue with the title, but we need to work on a title. He said, but this one is dead on. He said it's perfect. He said the only thing we want to do is drop the S. So instead of falling towards redemption, it's falling toward redemption.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, oh, drop the S. Okay, I guess that's, yeah, sure, no problem. So everybody kind of had
small
a good
change.
Laugh about it. He's like, no, that's it. That's not,
yeah.
Next subject. So,
okay.
But they were the actual ones that came up with the idea, and I loved it. And I think that was the other thing, the one that I should have sent you. The cover is going to look pretty much exactly the same, but the one subtle difference is the title and then my name. It's
right.
Kind of a shadow effect in the background. It's actually a what's called a Enochian script. And for people that don't realize, the Enochian font, the Enochian is an actual alphabet that was actually developed in the 16th century by Gallers.
Oh, okay.
One was actually a medical doctor, and I have this noted in the book. It was actually an alphabet that was developed by these two gentlemen in the 16th century who swore until their deathbed that this alphabet and language was given to them by angels.
Wow. That's interesting.
And what's funny is you could go on Word and you could or you could download a free font, an Enochian font, and what's cool is you could do a copy and paste, right? So whatever you're typing normally, you just copy it and click on the Enochian, and it translates it into the Enochian.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah, so it's very cool looking. So what I did was that's the one, a little subtle change in the cover. And then in the book I have where specifically a certain – it's not to, like, beat it over the head, you know, because other people will get lost. If they see this weird, strange writing. But
right.
It's like very specific, you know, like between angel and angel conversation, like critical conversation, or like maybe God to an angel in instruction, that sort of thing. That's where I put in additional Enochian. Plus, I had to be cognizant of the fact that I didn't want to end up with like a huge, humongous edition of pages and, you know, because it had cost to the book and everything, because we've already established the final, pretty much the final retail target price, and that was part of the meeting, the whole thing. So it was pretty amazing to go through, because this is I'm journaling this in postings on and I had never, I mean, if anybody knew me, they would know that I swore up and down I couldn't stand social media. I thought it was a time vampire, you know, it's just a waste of time. But I never really had use for it. But anymore, authors are expected to participate in their promoting and marketing, and that's so I'm posting on basically it's Instagram, Facebook, including like a couple Facebook, groups. Like American Christian Fiction Writer Group and Speculative Writer Fiction Group, something like that. And then LinkedIn. So over time, I'm like, I can't believe this. Like Instagram, I'm approaching 2,000 followers. Facebook, I'm like, holy crap.
That's great.
Like people are actually interested in like what I'm having to post or something. So it's good because when it comes time to launch the book,
you'll have some great sales.
Yeah. So, but
okay,
Morgan James does international and they have translation and the whole nine yards.
So Brian,
yes.
I read the original manuscript because you had given me before. So how much has changed in your character? If you can give us a little bit, but not spoilers, about Samuel, a little bit about him and why he was exiled to the earth.
Okay. Well, the first thing is what changed is, and again, remembering that I had never written anything ever in my life before. I mean, I still don't consider myself a writer, not yet. And I'm actually my editor's name is Loretta Leslie. It's Loreless Editing in Australia. And I consider her like my college professor in a university level creative writing course. That's the way I'm looking at this. I'm paying her tuition. It's what I'm doing. Because she is just I'm learning so much from her.
Okay, Brian.
That I can move forward. Yeah.
Brian, the character.
Yeah.
Camuel.
Okay. Well, that's what I was getting to. The thing that was totally missing was a lot of Camuel's background, like his entire childhood. I kind of just dropped him off into Savannah as an adult. You know, I didn't even think about that. And she has took him all the way and brought him back up from a little boy.
And so he has more of a backstory.
Yeah, exactly. And it's amazing stuff. So she's at it already. She's, I don't know, 4 or 5 chapters. You know, it's like, holy crap. It's like 9,000 words or something that she's working on adding, you know. So they're really killing it right now. But anyway, so in a nutshell, what happened was Camuel was part of a cadre or a team of angels of different levels, and I kind of get into a brief description of the 9 levels or the 9 houses of angels. Basically ranks is what it comes down to, like a military rank.
Mm-hmm.
Starting from Seraphim would be the top, and then you have Cherubim and thrones, and people have heard the designations, you know, and then all the way down to angel, which would be the closest to, you know, those are the ones that would be like your guardian angel, you know.
Right.
Camuel is a seraphim. He's an archangel, and Camuel is actually a real archangel. He's one of 7 archangels listed in the Hebrew spiritual text, the Kabbalah. Okay. So people mostly are only familiar with Michael, or I pronounce the L, Michael, or Gabriel, because L in Hebrew means of God.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So, but Camuel and this team were dispatched to Atlantis. Now, I had called it a different name, but that was one of the points of confusion between me and the editor. I had called it a different name, but then I called it Aquitania because I didn't want to just, I thought Atlanta, especially with the film that just came out a couple
yeah.
of years ago, I went to the movies and I'm like, oh man, this is like
Aquaman.
My book. Now I can't, now,
yes.
I gotta change everything because I'm sitting there and I'm like, this is how I was visualizing it. I'm like,
right.
How did they get my ideas? They picked my brain, you know? So I'm like, oh my God, I got to rewrite the whole book, you know? So, but that's,
well,
yeah,
just that section anyway.
But what they reminded me was that there was actually a real region of the earth called Aquitania or something very similar to that.
Oh, okay.
I think in Europe or somewhere, and they're like, be really confused. People would be really confused, like why it's over here. I'm like, okay, because I really wanted to try to avoid, you know, Atlantis. You know, it's been bludgeoned to death. You know. So him and the other angels are dispatched to, and what I do is I portray them as I have 2 classifications called Nephilim, which people are not aware, and actually there's actually biblical reference. They're called what referred to as sons of God had relations with human women. The sons of God is referring to fallen angels.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And the legends and the myths and I mean, everybody knows the story of David and Goliath, right? Well,
right.
Goliath, a giant, is Nephilim, The whole, and you know, and the children of Israel,
so they were the children
trying to go into
human of angel, yeah, angelic heritage, but they were born, yeah, to human women. Okay.
Right. And maybe to help people understand, to use like a modern terminology, like from the X-Men, they would be maybe considered metahuman.
Okay.
Like superhuman, right?
Right.
Because of their angelic heritage,
yes,
right? So
exactly.
The Nephilim of illumination, I call them, in other words, good angels and human women versus fallen angels and human women. So Nephilim of illumination, light, would be good angels or not fallen angels and human women. And the other classification I called Nephilim of twilight.
And those were
fallen angels. Dark. The demon.
The demon.
So,
gotcha.
The children of Atlantis were Nephilim of illumination. And just as portrayed in Aquaman, they had started out on land, above the surface, right? And
right.
Because their technology and wisdom and superior intellect, and they become arrogant, and they were, in the movie, they were searching for, what was it, the ultimate energy source, right? And it ended up, mm-hmm, destroying and sinking the city into the sea. Well, this was kind of, and again, what I'm worried about is like people are going to say, oh, he just copied the movie, you know. But I did write this 12 years ago. But so
exactly.
My idea was, yeah, my
and you
idea
don't read
was
comics,
that they,
though.
Yeah, yeah, no, I don't. I'm not a comic reader. So my thought was that they had become so powerful and they were so superior that they were taken over by the progeny, the evil queen, Alacora, who is basically, she's a young, petulant, immature queen,
right,
who is given authority by her ailing father, who basically succeeds him as a throne. But here's the thing: she is possessed by the queen of demons, Lilith.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, ooh, so she's just as black-hearted as you could possibly get. So there, she embarks on a crazy thing of a complete human subjugation, developing experiments on humans and just to increase their own technology and superiority, and basically turn humans into chattel, just slaves.
Right.
You know, and the classic worldwide domination thing.
Right.
And but then they take it, she takes it to the ultimate limit and declares herself deity. And they go about eradicating father and God from every edifice,
from everything,
just totally, and like now you come and worship me, and that was
no-no.
That's the no-no. So
exactly.
The angels and Camuel are dispatched one last time to try to reason with them and warn them, and said, "Here's your choice: you either turn away from this blasphemy, or God is just going to snap his fingers and turn you into mice or something. Eradicate your superiority and send you back
right.
to the Stone Age, you know." But Camuel is kind of hot-headed. He's
mm-hmm.
impatient. I pose Camuel and Lucifer as opposite sides of the same coin.
Okay.
So they have been given the same abilities, the same powers, the same intellect, the same – basically, they're the same angel. They're exactly the same. One is just dark, and the other is light. Camuel is light. Lucifer, of course, is – so they're opposite sides of the same coin. So,
mm-hmm.
Camuel is just explosive. His solution to everything is just nuke them.
Yep.
And talk later. And oh wait, there's nobody to talk to now because there's
a dead.
It's a mushroom cloud of dust. That's pretty much what happens. He just kind of nukes everybody and sends it into and just turns in. And my thing is the reason hard evidence. We've all seen these shows on TV you know, quote right. unquote documentaries about the discovery in Atlantis, you know, but really,
yes,
you know, yet to be actually
truly
yes,
evidence. Determined.
Yeah, yeah, and I think my solution to that was he had pulverized it so deep, so completely, that he turned it into grains of sand that just mix in with the ocean floor that you could never tell them apart.
Wow.
And then for final guardian, he brings up, again, reference to real scripture, he brings up Leviathan. You know, mm-hmm. the ultimate, and again, like, no, I did not steal that
Levy.
From Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
The thing that was guarding the trident, yes.
Exactly, exactly. So, and again, it's scriptural reference. You know, the ubiquitous, gigantic sea monster, Leviathan.
Yep, Leviathan.
But I portray Leviathan as one of the chief fallen angels. In other words,
okay.
he is about as close to being Lucifer as you can get. He's fallen angels, but he's seraphim. He was super, super high up in the pecking order, but he followed
Lucifer
in loyalty. But he was actually general commander of Camuel's legions, because Camuel is seraphim,
okay.
which means he's commander of hundreds of thousands of legions of angels. This massive
wow.
size army, okay, and Leviathan was like Patton, you know, he was like five star
right.
general, you know, and but he kind of turned his back, but so as part of his punishment, God basically gave Camuel dominion over Leviathan to be at his beck and call for whatever reason and purpose he needs. So Camuel calls Leviathan, he calls the marker in, and orders Leviathan to stand guard for eternity, just in case.
Wow.
In other words, he's guarding what would have been the opening to Atlanta, just in case somebody figures it out, they'll never survive to bring it back to the surface. So,
oh.
you know, yeah.
Sounds like the Bermuda Triangle.
Pretty much, yeah, something like that. So we have all this going on, but because Camuel, they were just supposed to reason with them and then leave the
mm-hmm.
their ultimate destiny to God himself, because
mm-hmm.
that's the ultimate judge,
right?
Right? He alone has the authority to judge. Nobody else judges. But Camuel executed the judgment on his own.
On his own without.
So God had to spank him, and he's not a fallen angel, but God exiled him to 1,000 years as a human being, because this obviously takes place a millennium, and then we bring it back up to the present time. So
gotcha.
And that's part of the backstory that the editor was going through, all the backstory and all that, and then the trial and all that, and then bringing
gotcha.
It back up to the present. Okay. So,
along the way,
does
he still have the same characters that help him while he's a human on Earth? The different characters that you have?
Yeah, once he's introduced to, because, you know, I was in Georgia when I wrote this, and I just fell in love with Savannah and coastal Georgia. And kind of funny that Savannah is actually marketed as one of the most haunted cities in the country. I mean, a lot of people are familiar with
right.
the, you know, Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, you know, the famous. So that's set in Savannah, and there's a lot
yes.
of history. So I'm like, oh, it's perfect. And so the main setting is Savannah. And the story, Falling Toward Redemption, okay, the story is where he begins to meet what becomes his family. Now, they're not human. Again,
mm-hmm.
I use a lot of the core message in these books is nobody has fallen too far to be beyond God's
redemption.
Love, forgiveness, mercy, and redemption. Right, exactly.
Gotcha.
And but the way he gave it to me, the way God gave it to me, and the way he told me to write this, because a lot of people, they're not going to walk into a Barnes & Noble or Books A Million or Amazon online or whatever. They're going to totally bypass the quote-unquote Christian book section, and they're going to miss the message. So I framed this, and I wrote this to attract, be appealing to a young adult audience, to adult audience, but secular, broader, wider, more global. Okay. And it's
okay.
Fun, and it's fun, and so what these stories are based all over the world. Each book is going to be set in a different part of the world.
Nice.
But this first one, of course, is America. It has some reference because some of the core characters, France, okay, and then the former Soviet Union, and then now Russia. So it's kind of laying the groundwork for future books. Like the second
right.
book is primarily Russia.
Russia.
What I done was a lot of research into cultural mythology. In other words, mythological creatures that are part of that heritage culture in that part of the world. Every culture and every heritage has different. They might be basically the same creature,
right?
But they're obviously they're named differently or they have different characteristics. So that's what I did, and I took a lot of mythological creatures that people are familiar with. So I have centaur and minotaur and fairy, different fae, and of course I gotta have a dragon. So I had this great dragon, but they're human, but they're true nature, and I call the way I describe it is they unveil. So they unveil their humanness and
so in other words,
present
that humans
to show their
humans
true nature.
To see them as right. So they look like humans to other humans.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Yes. Right. So, but the family that he's solely introduced to, and includes the one main one. I call her Mama. And actually I modeled her after a wonderful lady that I met when I came to Georgia, that's very deeply spiritual and meant a lot. So, and she passed away several years ago. And, so I kind of named her Mama, and, the name of the book is, Sylvie L, and she ends up being Angel, but just the lowest level, the first level Angel.
Right.
But she's been forgotten. She thinks she's been forgotten because she's already been here hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years in this area. And her latest form, if you will, is one of a homeless woman that basically lives in Forsyth Park, which is one of the big attractions. Savannah is this beautiful, big, huge park right in the historic district. It's beautiful. But she's basically she's like everybody knows her. I mean, everybody knows her. She's Sylvia L. She's Mama to everybody.
Right.
And she's left alone because she's like a fixture, but she's basically she portrays herself to be a homeless woman, but she's not. She's
right.
An angel. And Camuel kind of brings her back because she's kind of just given up hope that Father has forgotten her,
right.
Has kind of just abandoned her, and she has no hope. And she even says he stopped answering my prayers a long time ago. I mean, she's she's just really, that's it. I'm down here and I'm stuck. And Samuel kind of like recharges the batteries. And she ends up being like, wow. Over the course of the book and actually into the next book, and she actually ends up getting a promotion. she goes from lower level angel to like big boy, big guy.
Ah.
So
spoiler alert.
So, I just it's great. I mean, and they're all
okay.
So what's really cool is I just did a lot of research, and there's all they're real. "Quote unquote real," but you can look them up. They're mythological creatures.
They're all
and,
based on.
I mean,
okay.
on mythology. Yeah, on mythology. So yeah, so people have, they can connect to them. You know, they can actually visualize what they would look like. And what's really fun, kind of funny, is the way I've actually gotten these books and the stories, episodes, if you will, is I actually got them like I was sitting in a theater watching a movie. But then I have to scramble, try to. But I don't forget it. But I just have to get it down. I have to write it down or type it down or whatever. You know, get it down on the computer. But I've actually gone to get them in movie scenes. And what's I found really, really helps me is I actually visualize real actors and actresses playing the parts. Because it really helps me with the character development. If I think about that particular actor,
who would
actress,
you picture as Camuel?
Well, see, that's a tough one because I picture him. Hopes and dreams, and this is, I don't want to get too far off on a tangent, but I was actually kind of approached by two people actually in L.A. Well, one's out there, but one's actually in L.A. that actually said that if it gets to that point, they want to be involved somehow with either feature film or digital media. And I'm like, oh yeah, sure, right, And I thought they were just kind of pulling my leg. They're like, no. He said this is a really good potential for a direct book to film or book to digital media project. I'm like, wow.
Now, is he an actor?
No, he's a screenwriter for Paramount Media.
Oh wow.
I'm like, yeah, he's actually one of my LinkedIn contacts, and he just kind of came out one day, and he's like, do you have representation? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, no, do you have an agent? I'm like, no, I don't have an agent, and I don't. I don't have a literary agent. I was actually brought in by Morgan James directly by Mr. Terry Whalen, who is their acquisitions editor.
Right.
And he's at Morgan James acquisitions editor. He brought me in directly. I don't have a literary agent.
Right. So So who were you considering for Camuel?
Boy, see, Camuel is going to be tough because the way I picture him is like maybe late 30s to early 40s. But I would really want to see him as Hebrew, but tall. I mean, like, you know, 6'2", 6'3", you know, not ridiculously overbuilt, but just really athletic, strong, but Hebrew, definitely has Hebrew features. That's the way I kind of visualize him. Yeah.
Nice.
That's the way I kind of visualize him. Misha, his the centaur. It's Misha and Mama are the kind of the two first main characters that he meets. Misha is the proprietor of a pawn shop that is actually connected by portal to, you wouldn't see it. It doesn't exist on a human plane. It's a classically restored Victorian house called the Painted Lady.
So the Painted Lady.
Painted Lady is.
Okay, so good. They kept that in there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. In fact, that was actually a funny thing. That's one thing she was trying to text me today. Yeah. I don't know the actor's name. I don't know the actor's name. But he usually always portrays a Russian guy, either a Russian mobster, or the one funny thing he did was a few years ago he did an M&M's commercial where he's like, I'm going to chop you up into little pieces and put you in his
place.
The peanut guy's like, okay.
Yeah.
It was that guy with the beard. That's who I pictured. Mama,
oh yeah, he would. He'd be perfect.
Yeah, and Mama, I'm not sure of, another character was Jerry, who is this gigantic, ginormous minotaur.
Mm-hmm.
And the actual mythological creature is Geryon. So I called him Jerry.
Jerry.
And he's like, he's not just a minotaur. He's a giant minotaur. I mean, this dude is like, you know, 12 feet tall, you know, in unveiled form. He's like 12 feet tall, 8 feet across, you know, black as polished ebony, you know, horns, like, you know, that makes that would make a Texas Longhorn blush, you know.
So who would you have? Who would you think for him?
And it's a shame, but you know who I originally had pictured him doing it was that great actor, man. He passed a couple years ago. The African American actor, the Green Mile.
The one who gave the Green Mile, yes, Michael something.
Yeah.
Michael,
one of those hyphenated names. And I'm like, oh man, he passed away. But you know, he probably would have been too expensive anyway. But there was another one. He was actually in the what's the name of those movies with the vampire? It's the hybrid, the vampire. She ends up killing like one of the top vampires. She's like a really great swordswoman. I can't think of the name of it. She had these really like piercing blue eyes, black hair. But
it was a
there
TV
was,
series?
No, it was movies. It was full like movies. But there were the vampires and the werewolves, and they went back and forth.
Oh, Underworld.
Underworld, that's it. Yeah. And this one actor, and he was a werewolf, but he had this like insanely deep voice. An insanely deep voice. And I'm like, wow, he'd be really good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, whatever they did, it would have to be, you know, obviously it would have to be the computer because, you know, nobody is that big naturally. But I'm like, I'm just visualizing all these, like, I mean, I would be getting into book two, but I had two great characters in there.
So this has to kind of make him big, like Thanos.
Oh, he would have to be huge. I mean, he would have to be monstrous.
Yeah, he would have to be huge.
Because I describe him as huge.
Okay.
Yeah, and like
so.
the dragon is Drake because Drake means dragon. His name is Drake. And I picture him as like in the first book, he's like between 12 and 14, but he's just a genius. He's beyond genius, but he's a complete dick. He's just a complete nerd. He's basically dysfunctional in normal. I mean, he's just brilliant,
but he's socially inept. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. But I just really goofy. I mean, in a good way, but he's just completely goofy and off the wall.
A typical nerd.
But, typical nerd. There was a couple actors, but I guess now they're probably too old to do that. But it would be somebody like that. I mean, you know, something like a guy that looks like Harry Potter, you know, a young 12-year-old, somebody, you know, like that with the big, you know, Coke bottle glass. But then when he transforms, I have to make him prepubescent because the testosterone hasn't been completely turned on. And once it gets turned on, then his full dragon abilities start to come out.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So physiologically, that would make sense too. So.
Yes.
So when
he hits puberty, he comes into more of his power.
Yeah, and Misha and Mama, through a series of events that I get into great detail, him and his older sister, Sarah, who is actually turned out to be, I put her as a Nephilim of Illumination because her father, her quote-unquote father, is the Archangel Raphael.
Okay.
But she doesn't know it. Yeah.
Okay.
So she is developing these insane abilities for just, you know, her super senses, everything, and just powerful energy that she can, but she hasn't learned to form it and direct it and aim it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
So I'm getting into like as the series progresses, you know, obviously I'm going to age them. And to where they're developing their full abilities and they're learning to control them and through their different adventures and everything like that. So it'll be fun.
So it is being developed as a series. Is that what you're saying?
Well, Morgan James actually has manuscript two. They actually have book two. Now we haven't got to that point yet. But what's cool, we had talked about the hybrid aspect about committing.
Right.
to purchasing, and they said, look, here's bottom line. He said, depending on if book one does really, really well, that's off the table. We don't have to talk about for book two.
Oh, that's great.
In other words, I won't have any financial commitment at all
on the book two. Well, then that's what we'll look forward to. So you say it's coming out in ebook form at Easter.
That's our target, yeah, because we thought
that's
kind of agreed that would be good. Yeah, you know, redemption, salvation.
Right.
You know.
Well, it sounds great.
Yeah. It's been a heck of a journey, and I still can't believe it's almost here, you know. It's really something. I mean, it was on four different computers, and two of which completely crashed.
Yes.
So it should have been lost a long time ago, but it wasn't.
No, but it was a good story, and when I read it, I enjoyed the characters, and I have not read anything new since your editor's been working on it, but I'm sure it's going to be great when it comes out. So those of you who have just joined us, we've been talking with B.D. Vinoy, who is a new author, and his first book will be out in Easter of 2021. So it's something to look forward to there. And Mahogany says you should really take a look at this book. It's going to be great. From what I have read of it, I like it. And I think it'll be really interesting. It does have some fantasy elements that go beyond just Christian fiction. So I think you're correct in saying that it should be packaged as a really good fantasy story and not just, not just Christian fiction. So I think that would be great. And do you have a website or anything where our listeners can look up more information about the books and keep in touch to see when it's going to be coming out?
I don't really have an author website. What I predominantly use is I use three social media: Instagram, and Facebook, and LinkedIn. And
you have to tell them your names on each of these social media websites so they can find you. Is it under BD Vinoy? Is it under Brian?
Let's see. I'm trying to remember. It's Instagram. It's Fiction Novelist. For Instagram, fiction, and then the little slash, underline dash, or whatever you call it, and then novel.
Okay, underscore?
Yeah, underscore. And that's her Instagram. And then Facebook, I think, is my straight name, Brian Vinoy.
Okay.
Yeah, I think LinkedIn, they should be able to just punch in Brian Vinoy, and it should pop up, or Christian fiction author.
Okay.
I'm trying to get used to using the hashtag thing, so I'm using Christian fiction author, Morgan James Publishing, and Falling Toward Redemption.
Oh, as hashtags? Okay.
Yeah. So.
So what is the title of your second book?
Redemption in the Empire of Ice.
Nice.
Yeah, and it's actually separated internally into two parts.
Okay.
Because we only have
90 seconds, so.
So
we have that. So thank you for coming on the show, and I've enjoyed having you and learning more about the story and your publishing journey as well. So, when it comes out, I'd like to have you back again so we can talk about how it's doing and when your second book will come out. So,
yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great. Thank you. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. And thank you all for tuning in tonight and listening in to the Mahogany Says show. And Mahogany Says, look for this book in Easter. And when it comes out, we'll be looking forward to more books from this author. So I wish you all a good evening, and thank you for listening so much. And I wish you blessings, peace, and love.
been listening to Mahogany Says with Mahogany Silverine at mahoganysilverine.net. Thank you and good night.